In this episode, we hear from the inspirational Flair, who talks to us about her son's involvement in the Multi Schools Council and the issue of homelessness as she works for Crisis, which is a national charity looking to make a change. Flair, could you start just by telling us about your role in supporting the homeless?
Yeah, it's fun. So I'm the Learning and Development Manager for Crisis, who are sort of one of the national homelessness charities. I'm responsible for ensuring that all of our staff receive the training that they need to do their jobs effectively and well. We're quite a large charity now, about 600 or so staff. So we've got a range of different roles, as well as those kind of professional roles as well. So you've got like HR, IT, marketing, fundraising. But I guess the roles that you're probably most interested in terms of homelessness are the roles that we have to support our members. That's the name that we give for the people who we support to help out of homelessness. So we don't call them clients or service users, we call them members. So the roles we have there, we predominantly have coaches, because we use coaching as sort of a model of change to give people the tools and the resilience they need to help themselves out of homelessness. So probably something that you've experienced yourself kind of in your role, how coaching can help build resilience, kind of thing. We've got mental health coordinators as well to support our members who've got mental health difficulties, to help signpost them to the right support. And we've also got staff who work in what we call learning teams, because we provide us a learning offer to some of our members as well, so that they can get accredited qualifications in some cases. In other cases, it's just to help skill them so that they can move on into jobs. So for those people, obviously, I've got courses around coaching, predominantly for sort of coaching skills and things like motivational interviewing to help people commit to the changes that they say they'll make. Things around like mental health and homelessness. Other courses that kind of support some of the things that you find around homelessness, like addiction, things like that. And we've got things like courses around benefits, because part of helping people out of homelessness is to get them into the benefit system so that they can get their rent covered, for example, or money so that they can actually live to get sustenance. And we've also got courses that I run to support our learning teams around sort of special educational needs, because there's a fair number of our members who come to us with special educational needs as well. So in their learning environment, as you know, in your learning environment, we need to make sure they're well supported for success.
Absolutely. Well, so you can obviously hear from that there's so many different issues, and we're only going to be obviously in this podcast, short podcast, touching like the tip of the iceberg, really. And many of the things you've mentioned around resilience, around mental health, and around SEM, we're going to be coming to as well. But I want to lead on to education now, because obviously this podcast is designed to reach out to people within education and children. You spoke a little bit before we came on, Flair, about the impact that maybe poor experiences of education can have on influencing maybe some of the things that can push people towards becoming homeless. Could you maybe just expand on that a little bit about the impact that poor education can have?
Yeah. So Crisis commissioned some research, I think it was called Nations Apart, and that showed that about a third of under 21s had experienced homelessness, who had either been excluded or expelled from school. So it can have quite, this sort of moment in time can have quite significant ramifications down the line. Actually, I think I might say to you as well, some of the members that we work with, for various reasons, didn't have the most positive experience in education, and they might not have been excluded, expelled, but it just wasn't positive. They might come away feeling with a belief that they can't achieve, poor self-belief. And we've got a fair number as well with SEN that we support as well, so special educational needs. So they were in school and perhaps weren't diagnosed, or were diagnosed but just didn't receive the support that they needed. And then all of that cumulatively means they kind of don't progress, and they see education as a negative thing rather than a positive thing. And so what we have for some of our staff in Skylight, so they're the local crisis offices, where we're nationwide, we've got little offices locally. They might run, for example, engagement sessions. So that's helping members just come to be near us so that we can talk to them and start explaining a bit about what we're doing. So some might have painting or something going on, and we'll just say, why you're here? Why don't you just do that? You don't have to say, but why don't you just do that, to engage them actually into coming in, because for some it's a huge step just to even think about stepping back into any form of learning environment. And our learning environment isn't formal like a school. Kind of shows really how damaging I think it can be if during the school years, if the educational experience isn't a positive one or happy one or a supportive one, the ramifications of that into adulthood and the work you need to do to pull that person back up to believing in themselves and engaging into sort of developing and learning again is quite significant.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense from what we found recently. We've just produced a report actually speaking to you now, Fleur, around mental health in schools. And we've been running a resilience program, as you'll be aware. And the biggest thing we found from that is that before entering the course, children's kind of lowest score in the areas they score themselves on was self-esteem. And then even once they've made progress in that, it was still one of the lower areas. And you can see why that then has a link to their aspirations and their future kind of outcomes. And also the fact that I really like you mentioned there around lots of children who may have a need, but they don't have a diagnosis, or maybe it's not seen. And actually, a child shouldn't have a diagnosis to get the support that they need in school. It should never be that case. So touched on some really, really important issues there. And you can see why we were really keen to speak to you. I just overall kind of talking about homelessness. We're obviously in 2020 now. It seems like we've been talking about homelessness, well, for so long. And, you know, we have a lot of resources, especially in this country. We're very lucky. Why do you think it's still such a problem in 2020?
Well, there's not one thing, is there? I mean, no. Ultimately, you know, for crisis, we know it's driven by a lack of affordable housing. And we've seen that over time there's been a lack of investment in social housing as well as housing benefit. Under the Right to Buy scheme, less than 2 in 5 of those houses that are bought are then replaced back as social housing. So if you've kind of bought your social house or your council house, for every 5 of those sold, you'll only get 2 back in. So it's just not being replenished at the same rate that it's coming out. We need to ensure that there's affordable housing available and that people can access it. And that when people come out of homelessness, they are fully supported to help them remain housed as well. Because it's not just simply you put someone who's been homeless in accommodation and they're fine. They need ongoing support for a period of time. To end homelessness, we worked out we probably need 90,000 houses built every year for the next 15 years to solve the homelessness problem. And that's because it's not just rough sleepers that's that very visible face of homelessness. There's so much hidden homelessness. And I think the core homelessness figures for 2017 found that 160,000 households, so the number of people being much larger than this, of people who are sofa surfing. They're just sleeping on sofas in friends' houses and it's not stable accommodation for them. They're in hostels, shelters, or they're in unsuitable temporary accommodation, which might be that it's overcrowded. Or so it kind of gives you a sense of the scale of the problem. So the rough sleeping that you see is probably really only the tip of the iceberg. We also see some groups are more likely to experience homelessness. So we touched on a bit around those with special educational needs, for example, those leaving prison, those that are actually in the care system. So when they kind of reach 16, 18, they're quite likely to face homelessness. But because we can identify those, it's better if we can actually design our services at this point so that we can stop them becoming homeless in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you can appreciate, but the same with a child with SEN, as we were just talking about poor educational experiences. The cost to build someone back up once they've reached that low ebb and have been homeless to get them back in as a sort of functioning member of society costs a lot more than actually preventing it in the first place. And recently, coronavirus has shown actually that if we all work collectively and rapidly, we can put an end to this. So we have most rough sleepers were putting accommodation in hotels. Sadly for us, we know that's going to come to an end fairly shortly. So we've got a Home for All campaign about that, to kind of, everyone has the right to have a sort of permanent safe home. Just to give you a sort of stats around rough sleeping, the Westminster government, they do a rough sleeper survey. So they went out one night in autumn 2019. To qualify for that, you actually, as a rough sleeper, you actually have to be asleep. So if you're on the streets but not asleep, you won't be recorded as being a rough sleeper. So they counted 4,266 people who were sleeping rough, which was a decrease of 411 people on last year, on 2018. But actually, since 2010, it's an increase of 141%, 2,498 extra people sleeping rough since 2010. So it has, although we've seen a slight decrease, it overall has increased. But the chain database actually works with homeless charities who do outreach all year round. We kind of feel that might be a more representative figure of Rough Sleeping. And they counted over the course of a year 8,895 Rough Sleepers in London alone. You can see the difference between what the Westminster Government Commission and kind of outreach.
Yeah.
And we're also seeing an increase in people actually approaching their local authorities for assistance with experiencing homelessness. And we think that some of that's linked to sort of the benefits system is no longer really covering the cost of rent for people as well. And we found that 92% of areas in the UK are unaffordable to single people, a couple, or even a small family for them to be able to afford the rent. So 92% of the accommodation in the UK is not affordable.
I mean, Fleur, the numbers are staggering. I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm taking it all in kind of separate from just doing this podcast. Obviously it's something that I've been researching a lot more recently because the children have identified it as a priority. But I think even for you, I mean, you obviously live and breathe it. You're part of a network and part of a team, but actually, you know, we're sitting here in our houses, we're sitting here, on one of the warmest days of the year. And, you just can't imagine, you know, what it's like in the winter. And for the numbers of people, and like you say, it is increasing and it's wrong. You are the third kind of homeless charity or homeless group that we've spoken to just in this week. And all of them have said the same thing about COVID-19 and the fact that people have then acted. Now, my question back to the people that have made those decisions is, you know, if we can act now, why can we not act in other times? Again, if I link it back to education, I've been asking a lot of questions recently about the support that's being provided for children who are obviously out of school at the moment. In normal times, you still have quite a high percentage of children who are NEET and who are out of education for whatever reason. Those children cannot be forgotten when we go back into education. And it's the same with the homelessness problem. Just because we may come out the other side of a pandemic, we cannot forget about the homeless. And I hope people are really taking those statistics in. I don't think that through a podcast we can really, you know, picture it because it's just such big numbers. But I hope people are listening to this and thinking, yeah, we need to continue making a difference. So thank you so much, Fleur. You've given lots of information there. I want to now touch on two things that you've mentioned quite a lot already around kind of SEN and mental health and just your own personal experience of that in regards to anything at all. It could be with the homeless or it could be your own kind of personal life as well around SEN and mental health.
As you know, I'm a parent to an amazing young man. He genuinely inspires me every day. So it's my son, Jonathan, you know, Kieran, he's autistic. And in the main, he's quite proud to be autistic as well. He just wants the world to understand autism. And obviously his own podcast, the first thing he said, wasn't it? It's my superpower.
He did, yeah.
So I'm pleased about that because that's what we want him to do, is kind of view it actually as something positive, because he's got to live with that for life. He's got a moderate learning disability with that. So although he's attended mainstream school and he will continue to attend mainstream school in secondary school, he needs a lot of support to be successful. And I guess what's sad, you know, Jonathan is one of the lucky ones. You know, I'm there behind him fighting every step of the way for him. But there's some children who don't get the support that they need, do they? It's not just in terms of academic progress either. Often gets overlooked, you know, for Jonathan, he needs a lot for everyday life. So planning and organising, what book do you need and when, or even, you know, breaking down the question so that he can understand it, or even when he first went swimming, we'd have to say, no, you've got to dry yourself before you get dressed. But I wasn't allowed in the changing room with him because he was in the boys, and obviously being female, not allowed in there. Mm. So he'd come out dripping wet with his towel ready to dry himself, but he'd be dressed, you know, it's because he's not able to kind of manage those kind of things. And also he's got quite high emotional needs as well. So with kind of lockdown and him not being at school, you know, you're talking about these kids that aren't in school, it's so obvious that they need that structure. And most importantly, that kind of social connection and interaction with each other. So we kind of watched his mental health take quite a significant drop during the lockdown when he couldn't go to school, you know, and you've seen him now and again when he's having one of his moments. I think you'll agree, they're not like, it's not all the time and it's not often, but we were seeing that 4, 5, 6 times a day. And he had a lot of anger because, you know, we're not enough. His family needed his friends, you know, and we were doing Skypes with his friends, but that's not the same, is it, as genuinely being there to interact. So that's kind of the closest experience I have, really, and why I was so pleased with kind of the support he's going to have in secondary school, because that he's going to get that extra support around his emotional well-being and his sort of social skill support. For me, education isn't just about you go there to learn and make academic progress. Actually, it's a whole holistic support system that's there actually to prepare you for life.
Absolutely.
And I think it's something that kind of gets overlooked, particularly the kind of mental health and emotional well-being side of our children and their needs.
Put it so well there, because we've spoken to lots of children lately who, you know, have said just what you did around the missing of their friends and that social interaction. And, you know, you can have the most supportive family and people who are going to do lots for you and lots with you. However, you know, nothing can replace your friends and your friendship groups. And you're right, like, education need to acknowledge that, even more so going back in September. And I really hope they do. But also, the other thing I just wanted to pick up on quickly before my last question is, you used the word fighting there about having to fight for Jonathan. Now, I guess that it's, you know, it's a mother's natural response a lot of the time, and you know, you're going to protect your own. However, hearing it from my perspective, I hear so many parents using those words. And for me, it's upsetting, because I think that, you know, no parent should feel like they ever have to fight to get the education for their child. It should be a given right. And I think that's something that we need to keep highlighting, the fact that, you know, this word keeps coming up and that it shouldn't be that. And I hope that in the future, we can sit back and say, you know what, it's no longer a fight. Schools, education settings understand that children are all different and they're going to bring different sets of qualities, maybe other challenges. But that shouldn't matter, because we're there to help them, give them the tools for the future, as you mentioned, Flair. So the last question that I wanted to mention, and you've brought up Jonathan there, and as you mentioned, Jonathan's already done a brilliant episode for us and is a brilliant multi-schools ambassador, and he was a head boy before that as well. Can you just quickly touch on, from your kind of perspective, Flair, what difference has it made to Jonathan being involved in the multi-schools?
Oh, it's been huge, and it's been amazing. He absolutely loves it, and I've watched him just grow in confidence the longer he's been part of it. I mean, we're on a walk yesterday evening, he was talking about going to secondary school, and he said, oh, and he said, and the MSc, he said, I can still do the MSc, I must do the MSc forever, I love the MSc. And on his one page profile, it says, you know, that the box about what's important to you. First thing, he's a multi-schools council, right, of what something is that I must keep doing that, and that's hopefully his new school. So I'm sure we'll be able to encourage that. Yeah. It's just been fantastic to watch. I mean, when we were looking at where he's now going to secondary school, we weren't sure if they were part of the multi-schools council, were they? And he said, I need them to be part of it. So the head teacher was there, and I said, well, at the time, I think he was still head boy. So he said, well, as head boy, you have the right to say, I'm head boy of the multi-schools council, and will you join?
Absolutely.
So, and he was sort of a bit hesitant. We said, well, we'll be right behind you. And I said, and because we're behind you, that the head teacher's not going to shout at you or tell you what, you don't need to be worried. So he did. He walked up to the head teacher and he said, hi, my name's Jonathan. I'm head boy of the multi-schools council. They support people with special educational needs. I'm autistic. Will you join? And the head teacher's like, well, drop me an email. And, you know, so, but the fact that I think he sees that, you know, positive things. And I just don't think before the MSc, he would have even done that. So thank you, really.
No, it's just so lovely to hear. I love hearing things like that, because, you know, it's about empowering young people so they have the confidence to go and do that. And the reason I bring it up is because if anyone's listening to this podcast and, you know, their school aren't engaged with the multi-schools, and actually there's a child that really wants to express their opinions about, it could be anything at all that, you know, matters to them, then please get involved. And you can hear from Fleur how it's helped her son as well. So thank you so much, because you've touched on not just obviously a lot of important information around the homeless, but also, you know, the impacts that the multi-skills can have for young people. So thank you so much for everything that you've continued to do and all the support you've given Jonathan so that he can get involved as well.
Well, thanks, Kieran. Thanks for this opportunity.
No worries. Thank you very much. Take care.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.